Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
So we'll see what this Media Project is all about. It's hot in the political season, and we're going to give you some analysis, commentary, and if we're lucky, some insight into the media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Rosemary Armeo, investigative journalist and professor at the University at Albany.
How are you?
I think I'm okay, thank you. We'll see by the end of the show, because Dr. Shartok will tell me. Mm-hmm. Alan Shartok, CEO of Northeast Public Radio, is here. Sir.
Well, sir, I'm glad you called me that, because I'm worried about you, Rex. I had thought you had passed, because you're late every time we have start the show. And people are beginning to call you the late Rex Smith, so I was wondering.
It's nice of you to be worried. I really appreciate the concern, but we're still putting out a newspaper. It's just that I'm a dinosaur in a dying industry, but I'm fine.
Other than that.
I love that. You know, Rex has a good way of just putting me down, and it was subtle, but it was nice. I'm sorry we still have to put out a newspaper.
What can you do? So anyway, here we are in the post-convention glow. As people are listening to this, we've got candidates nominated by two back-to-back great national shows, the big shows of the quadrennial political explosion. So what do we think about the coverage? How did the media, if we want to do a broad brushstroke, do in covering these conventions?
Well, you know, in the old days, the other candidate shut up out of courtesy, usually, to the other party. So in other words, if the Democrats were having their convention, the Republicans having their convention, the other guys would take a powder, not Donald Trump. And he has been getting tremendous coverage because of his contentiousness. And along comes this issue of whether or not, and they've been playing the press conference, which makes it a media event, along comes the Putin scandal, in which it is alleged by some that Putin and the Russian group, formerly known as the KGB, where he used to be a colonel and now known by another name, have basically gone into the huge trove of hacked Hillary emails and others and the DNC emails. And now the question is not, and I had a call on this, the substance of what the emails said. No, it's rather whether or not Trump is collaborating with the Russians. And that is interesting. And now they show a press conference in which good reporters are asking these very questions. And Trump is yelling at them and saying basically, I know you're with her. I know you're trying to protect her.
There are a couple of issues there. Is it for what might have been a sarcastic comment, according to the Trump campaign? Let's have Russia look at the emails. Is it fair for that to be used by the media as depicted as a candidate calling for a foreign government to intervene in the American political process?
Yeah, I am troubled by that. I'd never like when we take one comment or one sentence and blow it up. I saw the news conference. I went back and read it, and it feels like one of Trump's many stupid, hasty, off-the-cuff, sarcastic remarks. However, isn't that the point that the Democrats are trying to make, that he makes these off-the-cuff, uninformed calls that rile up people and call into question his judgment as a leader? So I don't blame the Democrats for doing it. I don't blame the press for covering it. But the deeper issues of what's really going on with the Russians, have we covered that yet?
Great.
These are serious, serious issues. I said on the roundtable the other day that when Watergate came out. No one ever said. Wait, one second.
There may be people who don't know what the roundtable is.
The morning program here where we talk about news, and it's not just media news. But I said on that in Watergate, when Nixon's campaign strategies were under attack, as Trump's are now, we never said, oh, what did those burglars find? It was the invasion itself by Republican operatives that concerned us. And yet we seem much more concerned now that what was in the DNC mail were eavesdropping, rather than the fact that how did those emails come to light?
I don't know. I think there's been some effort.
It's changing now.
I think the New York Times jumped on that pretty quickly. It's just that we don't have a lot of sources. And you're actually asking for a second day story on the first day, I think, which editors, we tend to do.
Yes, that's a good point.
Well, there are a couple of other things that have come out as a result of this. You may be right, Rosemary. That may have been an off-the-cuff, stupid remark. But then the press, doing its job, began to find out what Trump thought about Putin and the Russians, and he started to say other things, so that the thread really became very interesting. Putin hates Obama. Putin hates Clinton. And then on top of that is one of our favorite subjects is that of Julian Assange.
Right. He's really been vilified in the coverage that's come out. And he, as usual, because he's an idiot too, he did it himself. You know, he came out and praised the work putting out these emails and the timing. He claimed credit for the timing on the eve of the Democratic convention, timed perfectly to most hurt Hillary Clinton.
Exactly. And it succeeded. WikiLeaks succeeded in taking down the Democratic National Committee chair, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And when a reporter, an MSNBC reporter, Joanne Reed, talked about this, saying, is there an affinity between WikiLeaks and Donald Trump in Russia, there was a threat that came from Assange basically trying to intimidate her.
And I've got more.
Yes?
He's saying, so Rosemary and Rex.
Oh, I got more. Yes, right. Yeah.
Rosemary and Rex, you guys are terrific on this. I, frankly, was giving Assange tremendous support early in the game because I thought much of what was being released was done in the public interest. Now I'm not so sure.
Exactly. Assange began an institution, WikiLeaks, that had this great goal of any news we get, we are going to give to the people, regardless of the consequences, because that's what happens in a free society. People get to act on the information. Now he's tainted that. It's not the first time. He's said before that he would use his powers to hurt people that he didn't agree with. But now he's actually done it. So it calls into question the whole legitimacy of WikiLeaks, which is a shame, because I think there is a need for that. We saw it with the Panama Papers, and some of the dirtiness from WikiLeaks could spread to other really, truly Edward Snowden-type whistleblowers who are giving information of importance to the press and to the public.
One of the interesting facts about the campaign coverage that has been notable, I think, is that the difference between what you will see on the broadcast networks and on the cable networks. And you can't help but pay attention to what seems to be a giving in to the more overt forms of, let's say, bias on the cable channels, Fox on the right, and MSNBC on the left.
Yeah.
I'm struck by how correspondents, that is, air personalities, whatever we're supposed to call these TV people in front of the cameras, are shifting roles. How when you see Chuck Todd, the host of Meet the Press on NBC, when you see him on MSNBC,
on a panel,
he's very clearly expressing a point of view, and it is very harshly anti-Trump.
Is something that we've not seen used, I think, to this extent. There's a Nina Turner, who is an Ohio delegate for Bernie Sanders, and she's on giving commentary about Hillary Clinton. That's a little tainted, to my view.
Well,
and then, of course, Corey Lewandowski. Sure. And where is he, by the way? Why have we not heard from him?
You mean he was now, for those people who are listening who may be watching it every moment, here's the guy who gets fired from the Trump campaign.
His campaign manager, big job.
Right, and is immediately taken on as a
CNN analyst.
Right. And Rosemary, among others, really raised big doubts about the wisdom of doing this. But you know what? In my house, in the Shartok house, what we do is we watch C-SPAN because we don't like the panels. It's just a lot of blah, blah, blah. It's predictable. You know what they're going to say. And we want to see the thing unfiltered. And so we just watch it without the opinions.
Well, in my household, we flip. We channel switch. C-SPAN, CNN, Fox News is a great perspective, MSNBC. And that speaks to the adequacy of coverage. You don't get it from one place anymore.
Mm-hmm. I, on the other hand, think our house is better than your house, Rosemary.
Of course you do, Alan.
It's a very, very, very fine house. Actually, also, using what people have found, what each of these networks has found is ostensible voices from the other side who are able to couch their criticism in a way to be acceptable to the network's own audience. By that, I mean the Republican analysts who are on MSNBC are sufficiently anti-Trump. Steve Schmidt, for example,
yeah,
who was
John McCain's
campaign manager, and a Republican analyst, a woman who was often in the stands during the Democratic campaign. Republican analysts who are nevertheless quite cordial to
the left. So who you find to be your analyst also tells you something about the people who are doing the finding.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Which is okay. There's nothing wrong with analysis. It's just that people need to know what neighborhood they're in.
Well,
they need to understand where it comes from.
I find myself now looking at the Morning Joe and his compatriot...
Mika Brzezinski.
Right. And there have been published reports that they're having a thing. So
is that why she got a divorce? I didn't
thing.
Know that.
Amazing, isn't
I
it?
Didn't
published
know
reports.
That. Okay,
all
now we're off
together.
On a tangent. Yep.
Not really. This is not a tangent, because we're now talking about the viewers and the way the viewers see things. So when I'm watching the two of them, I'm just saying,
Checking out the chemistry, eh?
Yeah, and also whether or not it's changing their views. See, Brzezinski was always somebody who was I always saw as the nice antithesis to that guy.
Joe Scarsborough.
Yeah, I don't like him. And so now I'm wondering if the whole thing is a setup, you know?
Rex, I don't know where to go from here after that.
Okay. Well, the whole thing is a setup.
Don't give me that. Give me that howdy-doody look.
You mean you think that the romance is not real? It's a setup?
No.
It is.
Their views are set up.
Oh, the views are, I see. They've been playing a role all this time.
Yeah, you know, Mary Matlin and the other guy, and like that. And one's a Republican, one's a Democrat. And, you know, they do their thing. Hmm. One wonders how much of that is. Is acting.
It's pandering, and I think the cable networks are definitely capable of that. You spark more interest in your morning talk show host if you're looking for intrigue between them. However, there's also plenty of analysis coming from these guys that Bear's looking at and screaming over. I mentioned Nina Turner, who makes me crazy. Jeffrey Lord, who is a Trump apologist, is on CNN. Annoying as... I can't say the word.
The word.
He's just annoying as all get out. Anna Navarro, she's a bubbly personality, but she just goes way overboard. So again, you're forcing readers not to read one measured, considered account, which used to be the goal in the old days in journalism. Now you're just like in a Russian country, you know, where you have a satellite dish and you're catching Voice of America and you're catching what's being broadcast from the country next to you to try to counter what's coming out as the official news source.
One of the difficulties also that journalists have to contend with when you're covering political campaigns is not only fact-checking, but almost checking the stage setting. You know, and that is the case that at the Republican convention, the world was depicted as a very dark and dangerous place, that America was on the verge of disaster, only to be saved by Donald Trump. In the Democratic convention, everything was on the upswing, and people were happy, and there was a great opportunity that has been brought to
America's
us by the Democratic
never been
Party.
Better.
Yeah.
Don't need
Quoting
to be great
Ronald
again.
Ronald Reagan,
yes.
Of all people, in the Democratic convention.
Actually, and don't you think that part of this is probably that we have learned from Ronald Reagan that people like candidates who smile more, who are upbeat, and maybe
even,
that's the Democratic
speaking
job
to your point, which is that these things are no longer convulsions of political outpouring. They're staged, managed event. Look at the controversy we've seen over the music of these. The Rolling Stones have twice now told Donald Trump, don't play our music. And the songs are all geared to the message. It's very intriguing.
Mm-hmm. You call me tangential? Okay, no, you're exactly right. I just thought it was time to...
You took a shot.
Hit back, yeah.
Just do what you can.
So the real question is, as Rex raised this very good point, dark and light, and whether or not this is effective, because there are stories about how Trump is in Pennsylvania, and he goes into an auditorium, and they get all these screaming people. In other words, has this changed anything? Has the presentation at the convention changed the way in which the Trump phenomena is working? I think they've really laid hands on Trump. The whole idea is to show him as a crazy man and to show that he's out of control. And I think it's been extremely effective doing that.
Well, we're veering into the political, so the political and the media come together. But Bloomberg and the Democratic convention gave a speech in which he called basically, not basically, he called Donald Trump a crazy con man. Mm-hmm. So, okay, that had a huge impact. Doesn't make a difference to people who believe that Trump is the Messiah who will save us all. That remains to be seen. And we know that there was a big bump for Donald Trump after the Republican convention. Right. What will happen now?
Yeah. No, you're right. Bloomberg, of course, being one of my heroes.
That was a great speech, very powerful speech, in the same way that Trump's was.
And by the way, he's always been one of my heroes. I think he genuinely is a guy who likes to do what's good for people. However, you know, he speaks to a particular class of people. His speech was to the business community, right? He was saying, you know, this guy talks about being in business. He's been sued. He's been bankrupted. He's lousy to his employees. He's doing all of these things.
Trump, not
Bloomberg. No, Bloomberg.
This is what Bloomberg said. Saying this about Trump is what you're saying.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm confusing on who he is. Yeah, we got two businessmen we're talking about.
Well, you got one who's supposedly, according to Bloomberg, not really much of a businessman.
Right.
Right.
However, the audience that he's aiming at is not the audience that's voting for Trump. It's this invisible audience, this
moderate Republicans.
Low, also, you know, white in the middle, lower middle class folks, or as Donald Trump said himself very proudly, I love the uneducated. And that is the group that he is looking at. So you bring a Bloomberg on, yeah, you get another 1% of the 1% who might be interested or who are going to do the right thing anyway, because they're with the George Bushes and the rest of the guys who abhor this fellow.
Not surprisingly, I think you're wrong. I think that Bloomberg, as another billionaire, actually even he was self-made, unlike Donald Trump.
He
didn't start with his money from dad.
And one of the commentators pointed out that he's actually worth perhaps 100 times what Donald Trump is worth.
Yeah. So you have a real businessman assessing the business acumen of Donald Trump.
But who does it help you with?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think it helps everyone. It's got to help. I think moderate Republicans is who they're after. And I don't know if the press blunts that in their commentary later. I'm not sure that came out.
Not surprisingly, I don't agree with you. touche.
It's always good to be here on the Media Project.
He's so annoying. Don't egg him on.
Alan Shartok, Rosemary Romeo, and Rex Smith here on the Media Project. If you want to share your views, media@wamc.org. And Carl in Connecticut wrote a quite long piece in which he says that Roger Ailes, whom we have not yet discussed this week, didn't create the intentionally biased media. He successfully created the fake cover of it not being as such. Now, I think that's an interesting point. And he says that if he's brought down because he's named in a lawsuit and nobody would hire him in a full or part-time basis, and that's a ruined reputation. So there you go. So it's interesting.
He's 76 years old. Who's going to hire him anyway?
Right. Yeah, and it's not as though he needs the money.
Only one more year.
That's right.
Right, absolutely.
So watch your behavior.
Yeah.
I'm an endangered species.
Well,
that's our theme, dinosaurs and dying industry.
Dinosaurs, what you could do. But the question that seems to emerge is whether Fox News will emerge from the post-Ailes era greatly changed. Currently, it's in the hands, the direct hands of Rupert Murdoch. He's taken over running the network day to day.
Well, theoretically, he's taken over. I'm sure he's assisted.
I'm sure he's assisted. But the analysts who are talking to people inside say he's meeting with the air personalities constantly. He's actually running the morning news meeting where they kind of set up the
Let us not forget that Murdoch and Ailes were close allies for many years. I do not think you're going to see a change in Fox, at least through this election cycle.
I hope that Murdoch isn't hitting on any of the people he's working with.
He just got that new Jerry Hall, young model.
Yet another wife.
Former, we're back on this theme here. Who's dating who? No one is dating anyone here in WAMC. It's all
true.
Not happening.
I think anybody believes that.
Gosh, it's kind of an amazing thing. Anyway, Carl in Connecticut furthermore says that Trump's been in this for a year and the press ought to have its act together on how to cover him fairly without making him to just an eccentric uncle figure. I don't think we're depicting this eccentric uncle, but he says it seemed effortless for the mainstream press to come up with so many fascinating fabricated stories to slag Gore with. They can certainly make informing us of Trump's lies into an attention-grabbing clickbait.
That's just not true. Trump is something new and unique to reporters. He has been called out for every one of his, what did we call them, stupid, sarcastic remarks.
Or lies.
remarks that would have been the end of the career for any other politician, and indeed have been. Don't let us forget Rockefeller. Nelson Rockefeller, our New York's governor, could not run for office, could not run for high office because he was divorced. Well, Trump's got three divorces. Nothing stops it.
And we do point out his lies. I mean, his lies
all
are
the time.
Out all the time. So I think, Carl, thank you for your letter. But
if you have a way to do it, Carl,
yeah,
let us know.
Let us know how it can be done. I also have to say the mainstream press didn't come up with fascinating fabricated stories to slag Gore with. There was coverage of the Swift Boat veterans, and the mainstream media did its own reporting.
Right. Gore was a liar. In fact, it was a story in Sarasota where he held up a picture from a local newspaper, mine, and said, see, this is what Democrats have done. You can't even have room for a classroom. Because on the first day of classes, there were problems getting seats.
Huh.
And Gore was skewered for that by his opponents.
And we got led down the garden path by the KISS.
The KISS.
Remember the KISS?
He's now, back on the romance.
What'd you say?
You're back on romance.
No, the KISS was very important because everybody picked it up and everybody showed it. The media ran with it. And, of course, those two aren't together anymore.
Well, 20 years later, they split up, so these things happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Probably didn't have anything to do with the media.
It probably had a lot to do with the KISS.
Yeah, what do you know?
Well, he did use Tipper. You know, that was supposed to be a passionate marital kiss to show the difference between him and his boss, Bill Clinton.
Hmm.
Who, meanwhile, 20 years later, is in front of an audience giving an incredibly great love letter to his wife.
Mm-hmm. Rosemary works in other countries, often advising investigative journalists. And we need to make note of Turkey. Quote, NATO ally is the phrase that we often use. Turkey in recent years has led the pack in jailing journalists. What is happening now is they are shutting down newspapers, websites, and TV stations, locking up journalists right and left.
42 are in jail right now, and this is part of the regime that was threatened with a coup 2 weeks ago, has used the excuse of the coup to go after all of its opponents, and those include people in education and in the press. And what's been the reaction here in America? Not very, very uplifting. President Obama, aware that Turkey is an important NATO ally, has said they'll support the return of democracy, urged the president of Turkey to use some restraint, which he didn't listen to. And Trump, of course, has said that's exactly what we need, is strong-handed government that goes after opponents. It gives me a taste of what might come in a Trump presidency.
Or maybe in a Clinton presidency. Because she's tough also. And
doesn't like the press.
I think there's something to that. Don't you think politicians, by their very nature, by their very DNA, don't like the press?
I always found her charming. I'm sorry to say that.
Hillary,
but I mean,
she doesn't trust us.
I'm sure that's true, but I don't think any politician trusts the press.
She's polite to the press.
To listen to what I'm saying on this program.
Oh, I just tend to tune it out.
It sounds what?
Like dog barking. You know, that's what I tend to think of when I hear it. Just hear barking.
I think that Hillary Clinton.
You don't have a license plate dedicated to
I
you.
I tried.
Yes. Here's the thing. The president of Turkey said he tolerates criticism, but not, quote, insults. How do you know the difference?
There is no difference.
He defines it, and he's got Trumpian-like skin, very thin, and he defines everything as an insult.
Trumpian skin.
And his retribution is horrifying. He is the one who took away a woman journalist's right to decide her children's fate. He took away her parental privileges. That's pretty evil.
That's evil. This is why we are lucky to have the opportunity to sit here in this country, sitting in this studio and criticizing.
But not for long.
We'll see.
Do you think we criticized? Did we criticize or did we insult our presidential candidates?
I hear
candidates?
There's a huge run on Canadian real estate right this second.
All right. Come back and hear if we're still here next week or if we've gone off running to Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. Yeah. The Media Project.
Is there such a place?
Moose Jaw. Absolutely.
Great
I'll tell you
name.
A story about that once we get off the air. Thanks for joining us on The Media Project. We'll see you next week.
The union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.